Do you think I need to go and paint that yellow BR, bruv?
Arms out to your mum's house. Arms out to your mum's house. Arms out to your mum's house. Arms out to your mum's
house. Condom's already on, don't worry.
You stay prepared, you know what I mean? Like a Boy Scout, son.
Exactly.
Yo, party people, ladies and gents, this is a very special episode of Arms House to Your Mum's House.
Yes, sir.
Oh, wait, hold on. Fucking hell. Already, already
pressed the wrong fucking button.
There we go. That's the right button.
To be
man.
Fair, that's the first time you've ever done that.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yo, we're really excited to have this guest. I mean, like a couple of weeks ago, we had a Grammy Award winner on the pod.
Diamond D.
And now we have a BAFTA award winner on the pod. Man, we're going from heights to heights here, yo. We got the legendary Steve's the Wiggy Mess, aka Steve Stamp. Salute, man. Thank you for joining us, bro.
Thank you for having me, man. Pleasure to be here.
Let me introduce you to my man here. Obviously, we've met before. My name's Maddie, Amber, Ahmed, whatever you want to call me. This is my man, Theme, aka Andy. Yo. So I just thought I should do that first, really, introduce you to.
That's very nice. Very kind of you.
Good to meet you, man.
We've both got honorary masters from Brentford Drive-Thru McD's, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so old that I remember that being built, and it's like, I remember that feeling of like, wow, we got McDonald's in Brentford.
Yeah.
Now we got KFC and everything. It's really progressed.
That TW8 is great.
I've waited for many an hour for a dealer in that Brentford car park for the fucking McD's, man. Sitting there just waiting for hours. Yeah, I'm 5 minutes away. Yeah, I'm 5 minutes away going, what the fuck?
I was more Texaco garage based for that sort of thing. But
no, fair enough.
It was nearer.
Sorry, this just came to me. In that Brentford McDonald's. Sorry, guys, like, people just do nothing.
It's very West London round here, yeah. Yeah. It's very West London. Anyone listening, all these spots. Brentford drive-thru McD's.
Yeah.
It's an infamous spot. It's an infamous spot.
No. Up to the corner, decoy.
Up to the corner.
Up to the corner, decoy.
Oh, stop the whip, stop the whip. This is fucking mug.
Yes, you, man.
Steve, what are you fucking doing here, mate? You're meant to be in Leicester. Where's my fucking brother, bruv? You left my brother again? Right. Where's Phobia? Oi, what's up with you? Wake up, boy. Where's Phobia?
He's there. And
wake up, boy.
He's at the squat raves.
No, I'll never live this down with my mates, man. When I first got my driving license, I was driving down that, South Ealing Road or whatever that goes up from South Ealing. Yeah. And I get a puncture on the car. Yeah, and it was my dad's car at the time. Like I said, I just passed my test. So the nearest place was the McDonald's drive-thru. And I went in there. I'd never changed a tire, never done anything. I fucking called the AA to change the tire, yeah?
Bro, I've never had that before. And I've only recently just got a car for the first time. And I'm dreading that first experience of having to deal with that. Are you not supposed to clear?
Well, I thought, fuck it. I've never changed a tire in my life. I'm not about to attempt it now. I called the AA.
In front of everyone in McDonald's car park.
Everyone. And then when I told my mates, thinking it wasn't a big deal, they were like, you called the AA, bruv? It's just a tire. Just change it. It takes 5 minutes. And they were gunning me. And to this day, they gun me about it. And I'm like, Jesus Christ.
But you see, because of our generation, you know what it is, yeah? Back in the day, when your car used to get a flat, used to go to the fucking boot. Didn't matter if it was a big car or a small Peugeot. Lift up the bottom bit inside the boot and there'd be a fucking spare tire. Yeah. Take that out. Take the jack out. Pump that. Now, any car, not even new cars, but any car. I had a flat at work on one of their cars. You go in the boot. There's no fucking spare wheel. There's like this liquid shit.
Yeah.
You like pump it in there or some shit. I don't know what you do. It's like inflates the tire with gel for a shit while you go back on.
Listen, I'm calling the AA, man.
Okay. No, and you know what? Now, the AA man, I remember him looking at me weird as well when he turned up and he was like, is that it? Just the tire? And he was like, all right. And he just fucking dealt with it. And I just remember him looking at me weird.
It's like when you get a plumber in and you sort of know, like, this is probably something I should be able to sort out. But I'm not that. I don't have the masculinity in me.
Yeah.
I got no shame as well. Fuck it, man. You know what I mean? I'll pay you to do it, man. Like, well, rather than me spend like half a day do it in a shitty way. You know what I mean?
Fuck. You're supporting the economy.
Exactly.
But do you do the voice, Steve? Do you do the voice when the plumber comes around? Like, you all right, mate? You want to cut Rosie? Yeah.
I'd say, son, you all right?
Yeah. Hello, boy. Yeah, it's the pipes. It's the pipes.
Yeah. And just squatting next to them, sort of, as if you're, as if you're like, sort of, yeah, that's what I thought it was. Yeah.
Yo. Wait, Manny, what episode is this? Episode 84.
84, yes.
You lot are going in.
Every week.
That was the thing, Steve's. When we started this, we were like, look, if we're going to do it, we've got to release the episode every fucking Wednesday, come rain or shine. Consistency is the key. And we've been going now, yeah, well over a year now. And, you know, it's gone from strength to strength. I mean, we're still not there yet, anywhere there, but it's fun to do. Don't cost much. Actually, my brother, Talal, comes on the podcast every now and again. He's this is his Zencaster we're using. He produces Alexi Sales podcast.
Okay.
So he had all the things ready. So we just literally had to just switch it on and start chatting shit, you know? So he made it easy for us.
Yeah. How's it been for you lot? Is it like a sort of, because I find doing these kind of like reflecting on my life and stuff, like doing these sort of podcasts, I feel is like therapy almost. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. There was a lot of my mental health was one of the reasons we set it up as well. I kept on telling you, I've got to fucking do it for my own fucking nut. I'm fucking going mental here.
I mean, Phoebe, this isn't a replacement for therapy, though, yeah? I know I'm
good at
that.
Yeah, but it is. Like,
you know what I mean? Theme definitely needs some sort of therapy, but it's all love.
Yeah, no, but it's not. We've never really done it to be like reflecting on lives. And like, when we have people on, we've had like good people on, like big writers from New York and a couple of hip-hop heads and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Comedians like Doc Brown and stuff like
that. Oh, yeah, we had Doc Brown.
But we set it up to just to be talk about like the 90s graph, that kind of culture, raves, all that sort of stuff from like back in the day.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it was loosely based on and set up. So we've never been too concerned about like, you know, oh, we reflect on this or what. We just chat shit.
Yeah, similar in a way how People Just Do Nothing kind of hit that little nerve, that nostalgic nerve, even though
it wasn't... similar in a way, yeah. BAFTA award winning banner. Do you know what I mean, bro?
Yeah.
I'm upset.
Yeah, because they were kind of, for us, like People Just Do Nothing was us kind of almost like imagining what it would have been like if we'd just gone down another path in a way, or just got locked into like having a kind of refusal to move on from that culture. And that was what was funny about the boys is that, and those people obviously exist as well. So we thought it'd just be
100%.
It'd just be a funny thing to sort of explore. Like imagine if we just sort of got into pirate radio and just refused to stop doing it, now.
I've heard you mention it, but only a couple times about that Tower Block Dreams thing that came out on BBC.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, there was, you know, quite a lot of inspiration through that. I'm imagining, I mean, not even having asked you, but you could tell, you know what I'm saying? Especially right at the beginning with the YouTube series. And because we watched Tower Block Dreams and we were taking the piss and we'd go, meh, what are you talking about? You know, copy them. And like, it was so fucking funny. That guy who was like, I will kill everyone, you know, like...
Yeah. Y2KFM is the biggest pirate radio station in Essex.
Yours truly!
Killer, a 24-year-old MC, is the station manager.
All my gang full of weed! It's Sunday morning, Super Sunday, and we are taking you to yours truly. Who the bumba put that picture up in this? It's a Ross lad! Yeah. Hey, mate! See that shit? Who's that?
Selassie,
isn't it, man? Is that Selassie? Who's
King
of Kings. Is that Ian on?
King of Kings.
Big up Raisin, Tabamba. Is that Ian on? Original Jamaican crew. Big up Raisin and Lawsy. Shablish.
We loved that show. And then when we saw People Just Do Nothing on the YouTube, we were just like, that's fucking genius. They took
why didn't we do it? Yeah, exactly.
I can't believe genius. We didn't think about that. Like, that's when you know it's a genius idea, is when you're sitting there going, why didn't I think of that? It's so, like, you know what I mean? It's right there in front of you.
It was a lot of things around that time that were sort of pointing in that direction. Like, we were kind of, like, Beats, Hugo who plays Beats, was getting into music at that time, like production. So he was kind of making beats like all day long and was making these kind of like garage beats at times that we were like doing kind of MC characters over for like, this was like MySpace days. Yeah, so we'd be doing the voices because we found like that sort of, all of that, yeah, those ridiculous kind of, So we would just sort of freestyle over these garage beats and then record it and turn it into like tracks and stuff. And we were called the Blazing Unit. Mike, what's my guy called? It was that Stevie Bassline 3000 or something. It was like was my name. And then that was like an early kind of fake garage crew basically that we created. And then when I met Sipa, he was talking about that documentary, and then I got back from we met in Thailand, weirdly. Like, we started sort of messing around with characters in Thailand, just like kind of pretending to be on pills and going up to people at like full moon parties, like almost like kind of terrorizing people, just like in character. Wasn't even filming any of it, it was just for ourselves, just for a laugh, just
for jokes,
but But yeah, we kind of tapped into these like Steve's-esque type characters. And then when I got back we were still sort of talking about, oh, we should film something with these characters. That's when I saw Tower Block Dreams. It was sort of after that point. And it was like, it just cemented the idea of like following these kind of like a pirate radio crew. I feel like that was already sort of, the idea was sort of already there, but it just reinforced it and was just like, it was just like, fuck, there's gold in this. Like, the more you double down and the more aggressive you are with your conviction, the funnier it is. And that's what, like, Killer was the ultimate, like, just so sure of himself and so aggressive, like, with it.
And he was a proper, I mean, I don't know the guy personally, but he was a proper scumbag, man, that dude, like, by the looks of it, you know what I mean? The way he treated his missus and what he was talking about is funny as fuck, man.
Yeah, but it's, yeah.
He doesn't come across well.
You can do what you want, isn't it? Double down it, like he was saying, just do what you fucking want, man, because of the character.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there's a certain thing as well, like a delicate balance that only a few people have kind of hit. I think David Brent in The Office, you know, there was a certain amount of reality, but then another amount of complete silliness, you know, and taking the piss. But it comes from a place of experience or a place of love or like a real connection to it. But then you add that next layer onto it and just takes it to another level, you know. And you can tell you guys loved it, you know what I mean? It came from a place of love, you know.
Definitely, and especially like with the music and the sort of the set design and everything like that, we were very like adamant that it had to be kind of accurate to what like those conditions would have been in a pirate radio station. Or even
you must have
that.
Been on pirate though, weren't you?
I've back only been.
You must have had some experience of like some. There was too. It was too good. You know
I was only on pirate a few times, but the ones that I was on one that was like in the back of like a phone shop, so it wasn't as good a reference for the people just do nothing sort of studio thing. But Sipa used to run his mate used to run a pirate radio called Corrupt FM, so that was like he literally just used his actual kind of his actual real radio station, brought it back to life.
I remember doing a pirate radio in Hanwell, and it was a disused fridge for like that used to be an old like meat packing building. Amazing. Or something, I don't know, in West Ealing, like just by Hanwell. They had the big fridge door, and that was like the sound booth, you know what I mean? Because it was like properly,
it's also makeshift, and that's part of the fun, and that's why like Jabuddy sort of came about, because there was this like, we had this character Asim was doing like prank calls with, basically, where he'd like ring up like brothels and be like, hello, have you got any lovely ladies for me? And like, are they clean? Have they showered? And then you'd like,
I like them shaved.
Yeah.
And but that's just for joke at that time, still. It's just for joke.
Yeah, but you'd, but
no one's filming anything.
Nah, and there was recordings that that Hugo had on his computer, and I randomly heard some of these like prank calls one time, and like, and I was just like, that buddy character's amazing. And then Asim got involved as like the sort of like cameraman, and he was editing the stuff, and we were like, oh, you should do that Jabuddy character, and we're like, we'll give you like a leather jacket and we'll dress you up, we'll sort of like give you some nunchucks so you can like, we basically went completely mental with him straight away. Like, he was doing nunchucks on the roof, like this production company that my mate worked at, we got up on the roof, and it just evolved like in the maddest way, where, like you say, it was kind of like, it started from a place of like wanting it to be kind of like true to the world, but then also we just got carried away sort of fucking around and like pushing the ideas to the more extreme versions. And that, same with Steve's as well. It's like, he just became this like...
Bro, Steve's is so on point. Yeah. Like, everyone who's got that mate, where everyone goes to his house and blazes, and on the sofa at that house, there will always be one Steve's.
Yeah.
Or we all bumped into a Steve's at a rave, you know what I mean? All of us.
So pinpoint, accurately fucking sick. It was amazing, bro. He is amazing. He exists.
Yeah, he's out there. Well, I'm going to Glastonbury next week, and there'll be Steve's everywhere. It'll be amazing.
Oh, sick. That's brilliant. More middle class Steve's, like, since they, like, you know, put the fence up. I remember before when you could jump into Glastonbury, no one used to pay to get into Glastonbury. Like, I'm talking pre 2001 or whatever. And that's when you got mad Steve's in. And now it's a little bit, you get the Steve's, but they're a bit more privileged Steve's. You know what I mean?
They're still Steve's.
Steve's with access kind of thing. Yeah.
You know, I just want to add this one thing. I just sent you something on your phone, Steve, if you want to check it out.
Yeah,
it's on our Instagram, talking about doing characters. Like, me and Theme, like we said, we do. Yeah, we do like a...
Gotta get a beer.
Yeah, go on. I'll let you watch it for 1 second. It's only 20 seconds.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. You know what an R is, yeah? If you're doing capital, yeah? Yeah, you've got to have a little bit there, yeah? Going up there, yeah? All right? All right? Old school, yeah?
Let's get used to
that one. Old school, yeah? Bring it... Oh, I don't know. Let me know if you want me to take over, yeah?
For fuck's sake!
Yeah, don't get the lines mixed up, yeah? You lot don't know nothing about...
This is shipping constantly.
Yeah.
Do you know what's weird? I was having a conversation the other day about like my writing process with my mate. We're in a show called Peacock at the moment, and we write it together. So there's always like one of us is always typing, and the other one's just over the shoulder going, "Yep, what are you doing? What's that?" And then you sort of like something. If you write like a joke, it's like half decent. Like, oh yeah, that's good.
Well, that we made, like, we recorded that about a year ago, and it was just impromptu. We didn't plan it. I was just painting a theme. He goes into these
characters.
I just
came to piss him off. It wasn't a bit.
My brother happened to capture it, and so I found it on my phone. So I put it together as a little meme. I thought, backseat painter. And then, like, obviously, it went a little bit viral, semi-viral. It's been seen by like 100,000 people now. It's got like 50,000 likes and shit.
Yeah,
and, weird that some bits do
and
that.
Because in the comments, some of the people saying, "Oh, that's like my uncle when I'm on the building site. He's always behind me, going, you know what I mean?" And all it's like, you know, the
people just on there calling me "what a wanker." Like, you do something like that, and people still don't know whether it's, you know, fake or not.
Yeah, everyone's fuming at you.
Fuming. That is brilliant.
They're going, "What a cunt! Throw a spray can at his head!" Like, people were like proper laying into him. I'm like, bro, he's playing a character, man. Oh man, I mean, have you had a funny run in with people thinking that you're like Steve's or something? I don't know.
I feel like people are. A lot of the time I'm very surprised by how sort of normal and boring I am as a just like an everyday person. So like if you see me with my glasses on in Tesco's
and they're like, what a letdown.
What the fuck? Like when and they just want me to be this sort of crack.
Has anyone ever like offered you drugs?
Can you just be Steve's in the aisle of the supermarket? Go on now, please, just for like 1 minute, so I can do a video. You gotta turn into fucking.
Where's the hat? Where's the hat?
Where's the hat?
Sorry, I don't have a hat. But people do. People give me drugs. Yeah. We've done it. We start doing a thing at shows now where basically I do like an announcement where I say security have asked for you lot to pass your drugs down to the front so I can look after them until the end of the show. And people just start throwing like zoots at me and shit. So that's quite funny.
Oh man, that's cool. And you don't do drugs, do you? I mean,
I don't know. No, I've never really got into any of that stuff, to be honest. Mm. So it's always been like it's all just observed, all the Steve shit, really.
All right, because you play it really well. You're very socially observant, then. Yeah. Like, you know, that vacant look, and then like the...
Man, the garms, the, you know, man, fucking hell, the brilliant.
A lot of the garms, like the sort of spliffy stuff or the...
Dreddy.
Yeah, even dreddy, yeah. And those kind of things, I feel like when I was younger, I would have wanted so much. Like, and now... It's like this character sort of allows me to get all the shit that I would have wanted so as a good. Kid.
So good.
It's just kind of nice.
This will be a good segue into how we met initially, how we first met. I think way like 12 odd years ago now, man, something like that. I was doing warehouse parties here in West London.
Yo, we had the West London warehouse party. With none of us.
Yes, West London Warehouse Party.
We got corrupt. We got corrupt effeminate.
Just bring it on me. Bring it on me. Bring it on me. Sorry.
Just to get me though.
Yeah, and him.
If he's on, I'm on.
Not as much as me. But don't forget about decoy, yeah.
Easy.
Hey, what about fantasy?
I'm a Pino.
Yeah,
not
like.
Not
and Steve's. He's my love. Who's like, who ready for your body, though?
Yes. He's had a few vodka lassies, he's feeling a bit.
He's a bit drunk, I get some more of him. You're fucked, your buddy.
I'm fucked. I'm ready for old school garages.
And they were all like garage drum and bass and hip hop kind of parties, you know. And we were well into the YouTube series, as I've already said, you know, before you lot were on the BBC. Yeah. And someone who went to the party, I think Candy, who actually made our logo for us. Look at Theme's t-shirt. So she made that logo for us.
Candy Bandit.
She went to school with Hugo, I think, in Brentford.
Yeah.
Or somewhere. Like had a connection somehow.
You know, 2-inch Punch? It's his sister.
Amy Ash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there we go. See, West London, bro.
Brentford, all right. Gang.
So it was that, because my memory is notoriously shit. So I can't remember all the details. I'd love to hear like your side of how things happened, but I want to tell you my basic memory.
Yeah.
And then I just was like, yo, I don't know if they actually DJ and MC or if they're just playing characters, but I would love for them to come to the warehouse and we could just do a, you know, I wanted to do a chav because they were usually themed. So we'd have like a
you
jungle.
You did do a chav, no? Someone said it was too harsh or some shit. Well, I went to Bush Market and bought loads of chavvy garms, bro. Yeah.
So I'm about to get to that point, Theme. Because Theme was there at the party. He was there, man. And so I was like, yeah. So Amy put me in touch either with you or with Hugo. And if it was with Hugo, he said, nah, chat to Steve. He's like the brains behind it or something.
Well, I was the only one who could write a coherent email.
There we go. Basically, but it was me you were chatting to. Like, I can't, you know, I can barely do that too.
Brilliant.
But and anyway, so I messaged you through Facebook or something. I was like, what would it take to get all you guys down in character, do a little DJ set? I don't know. And you were like, we'll make it work. Don't worry. It will cost this much. Can I say how much I paid you? I mean, it was nothing, basically.
Yeah,
It was 300 quid for all of you to come.
Yeah, and do you know what, though? So from our perspective, we've just been doing these videos, obviously, in character.
Mm.
And you were the first person that suggested that, to do, like, an actual, like, party. And we were all kind of like... That would be joke, and we could film shit and get like content or whatever, and sort of do it as a, you know, like another episode essentially. So it was like, for us, it was like a way of doing another, I guess, like another YouTube episode in a way. But it was such early days that we were like, the idea that anyone was even paying us for anything was mental. Because we hadn't been paid for any, obviously, the YouTube stuff was all just like,
yeah,
everything was favors and we didn't spend any money on it whatsoever. So it's like,
yo,
this is £300 up.
But didn't they body it, Maddie? Didn't they body it?
Listen, man, when I put the word, because I remember going,
I can't
to,
remember what I was.
Yeah, everyone,
I think they bodied it. No?
It was a mashup night. I'm going to get to that point. But still, in the lead up, I remember chatting to Steve's going, look, we theme, each party has a theme usually. So this one, we're going to do a chav theme. Everyone's going to dress like a chav. And then I remember you being very adamant going, nah, I don't like the word chav.
Yeah.
Call it the pirate radio, you know, do it around pirate radio as opposed to chav, because you thought that was a too negative. I don't know. What was your thing?
When was this?
I
what
still
year
feel like,
this?
Even now,
12 years ago.
I feel like chav was like the sort of the media's term for like people that wore Burberry and were a bit like leery or whatever. It was, I don't know. I didn't love the word chav. And I thought what we were doing was sort of, I didn't want it to be sort of misinterpreted as like we're doing this sort of chav, like
degrading tape. Something.
Yeah, because there
or
were
even associated with it. Yeah,
I feel like there were people that were doing that sort of fake chav, like comedy stuff, and and that was, I hated all that shit. So I just wanted to make sure that we weren't going to be perceived as like a sort of spoof chav act, if you know what I mean.
No, that makes sense. That makes total sense. I remember thinking at the time, because you were literally about, I remember when you turned up, you told me, yo, we got the BBC deal. You'd literally just...
Was it at that time? Yeah.
It was. So I remember you telling me.
It must have been the pilot, right? Or was it...
It was before anything had come on BBC. You said it was coming soon. Like, we've got the deal. It's all, the ball is rolling. We're working on it. And I was like, oh, shit, wicked. You know what I mean? But not thinking much about it because, you know, I didn't fully understand what that meant at the time. You know, I just thought, yo, these guys are fucking jokers.
Well, but also, it didn't really mean that much at the time because, I mean, from, you know, looking back now, obviously, like, at the time, it was, for us, like, we wanted to take the opportunity, but... It could have just been nothing. It was like a pilot that was part of like a series of pilots that they put out all at the same time with like, it was, I think it was called Blaps or something, like comedy Blaps.
I remember that now. Yeah. On so BBC Three or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was just all these like low budget sort of little comedy short things that were like pilots. And we were one of them. And basically... Like most of them didn't get made. So like we were, it could have amounted to nothing even at that point. But
I mean, for people who might not know, like pilot, TV pilots get made all the fucking time. And maybe 2% of them, 5% of them actually go on to become a TV show, you know? So yeah, you were lucky, man.
Yeah. And I've done other shows where like even Peacock, like we did a pilot and then that sort of didn't get picked up. So then we did another pilot and then that got picked up. So even like, and that's later with a BAFTA, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it's hard to get stuff off the ground. So yeah, at that point, you were onto us very early, basically.
I see. I got, you know, I saw the genius, man.
But also it's interesting that you noticed how like we were particular about certain elements. Yeah. And I remember when we first started doing the DJ stuff that like, I was also adamant that like the vinyl, it had to all be on vinyl because Corrupt FM would have been a vinyl station. Like it wouldn't have been USB.
Yes, sir.
Do I remember correctly? Because at that time, I don't think Hugo was very confident at DJing at the time.
We'd all grown up DJing. Yeah, just to give you the backstory, like me and Beats used to DJ together in Brentford and we both had a record collection and we both were like competent.
Well, garage music.
Yeah, garage. And then later went into sort of hip hop and we were obsessed with like kind of Neptunes and Timbaland Productions and all of that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But at that time we hadn't DJed for years. So like when we got sort of back into it, like at this thing, it was actually quite like, like stressful in a way because I'd insisted on like it being vinyl because that was what I was used to. But then a lot of people, I can't remember exactly how it was in this part, but I remember afterwards the shows that we did later, there would be issues with like the vinyls jump, like the needle jumping and the like
people practical.
Weren't really using decks anymore in that way. So like certain clubs or certain places could do it, but a lot of places would like they'd be sort of dusting them off for us, like in fucking.
Oh, shit, yeah.
And
then
the rattle of the bass would just send the needle jumping about, and then back. And then that's stressful as a DJ because you're trying to beat match, but suddenly the needle jump, it's just like ruins your mix.
It's all and of even that sweat, stuff. Sweat dripping onto it as well from the ceiling sometimes would fuck it up. Yeah, man.
So I feel like when I look at those early, because there's footage of like, we did a Just Jam as well around that time, I think. And
this is typical Steve's Wiggy Bess. Yeah? Yeah, take it back now, take it back now. Steve's, take it back. Ruined it, innit? Like, don't let him hear the drop before you turn it up. That's one of the main rules.
Let's do it.
All right.
And I was just like, not, I was trying to be in character, but I was also really like struggling to concentrate on like actually not clanging the fuck out of the dance basically, and just trying to make sure that like at least the mixes were like not too bad.
But that goes to show, man, because I reckon most people probably would have just pressed play on a mix and pretended. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
No, but I remember at the warehouse, because I know that you lot now, bona fide DJs, all of you lot, even Decoy and all them lot, you know.
Dan's journey's mad. He's like...
He's incredible,
he's become a proper fucking DJ through this process. And like... He's
and
now,
you too, man.
Yeah, and I basically got sort of... got back to being competent again. But I don't feel like I never really pushed myself to like... to sort of learn... beyond like where I was before, in a way, it's like the technology.
What were you mixing back in the day, like garage?
But it was all just like beat matching, and there wasn't too much of the techie sort of stuff now that you've got with like what's it called, Record Box and all that stuff.
And
all that, just move the crossfader over a couple of times, mate, and drop it in, Bosch.
Yeah, exactly. That's me. Yeah, that's my style. And to be fair, most of the time I'm DJing as Steve, so it's almost like if I started doing two. Technical kind of stuff.
You can't.
It wouldn't be in character.
Drugs. Yeah. Allow these.
So I'm deliberately shit, guys. If anybody hears me clang, that's why.
No, but that is an excuse. But I remember at the warehouse party in particular, I remember you guys obviously, like you said, weren't so confident because you asked us to set up two turntables, one for you guys to be performing and then one to the side where your actual mate was going to be doing a lot of DJing or something like that. I remember that kind of setup happening. Was it DJ Phobia or something? I can't remember.
Phobia, oh yeah, Phobia would have been.
Or the Love Child Phobia. What was his name? Something.
Oh,
the Love
Fantasy,
Child,
probably.
Oh, Fantasy.
Fantasy. Yeah. Oh, so there might have been. I don't think we ever had like a fake deck set up because we just wanted it to be. Again, it was like we wanted people to know that we could DJ. So it was like, that's why we didn't do the sort of press play thing because it would have been too. You would have been able to see through that. Like if I was watching
this,
that,
is proper
I'd be like,
pirate radio, bruv.
Yeah, they're not doing
we
it.
Know how to mix.
Yeah, and it was like it was like an immersive experience. You know what I mean? It was like you had to properly do it. But maybe there was a fake deck that we got Fantasy to. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember there being a two deck set up, but maybe because you lot did your show and then he took over and then just like and this was before he was Grinder, he was Sniper at this time.
Yeah,
it's the MC Sniper here to get you hyper. How come he lost Sniper? What happened there?
So Sniper,
did he get sued by someone called Sniper?
Yeah, there's a kid called AM Sniper who's I think he's like a rapper from like Iron Apple or something. And he thought that we based the character on him because there was like he was like half. There's a bit where Grindr, where Sniper said that the reason his kids mix race is because he's half Cypriot or something. And just by pure chance, this AM Sniper guy was half Cypriot or Greek or something. So basically he took that as like evidence that it was based on him, even though we didn't know who he was. And and he wanted to, like, this was when the BBC was involved. So he threatened to sue. And the BBC just said, can you change it? And we were like, to be fair, we'd only done a pilot. So we were like, all right.
Mm. And Grindr as well. You can put so many more funny jokes in as well about the Grindr.
Yeah. I mean, it was hard because for us, it like, even though we hadn't done anything more than a pilot, we'd been doing it for like years. And Sniper was like just very inbuilt into our like just how we talked and how we... you know, it's hard to like suddenly change the name of a character, but over time it got easier. And then actually Grander was like, it was quite fun coming up with like the new name for him and stuff. So we just embraced it.
So that was the first gig that you did, yeah? That West London Warehouse.
So that was the first one, yeah.
And then did you get a lot of gigs? Like, off? Did you just start, fuck it, let's do a load of those? That was quite fun.
It was more just like reactive. So we got offered Just Jam as well. And then, like, we were never sort of asking people if we could DJ. It was like we would just say yes if people asked us, basically. And then we... Like you say, like I was basically the manager at that point. So I was sort of negotiating. I remember finding out that Oxide and Neutrino were charging 600. So I raised our price to 600. And then,
yes.
And then like we were doing, then we got like asked to do like Outlook Festival. And that was crazy. Like we got flown out and like had accommodation and this free festival abroad and everything. And at that point,
we met Croatia.
Yeah.
Croatia. No, yeah. Yeah.
And we met Neil True Tiger out there, and he was there. I think he was DJing out there at the time. And he was like, who's managing you lot? And we're like, oh, no one. We're just sort of like blagging it. Yeah. And he was like, bruv, like you lot need a manager. You need like someone to sort this shit out for you. So he basically became our manager, and then started. That's when it sort of started to become a bigger operation. That's when we were sort of, and then you know, over the years we've then got a music agent involved. Shout out Hannah Shobula. Yeah, so we sort of, the machine just grew gradually over time, and it's just now become like, you know, we don't have to sort of sort stuff out. We've got like someone who tour manages us. So like when we have like a show, there'll be someone who like sends us an itinerary and does all the work behind the scenes so that we can just like step out and just have a nice time. And that's nice. But yeah, those days of like us kind of responding to every email, negotiating prices, it's a weird thing to be negotiating your own price. That's what I...
It is mad.
I don't miss that.
Man, and yeah, that's a whole other conversation about artists when they finally, like, you know, start building a buzz, and then they got to now work out the whole business side of things, and they're just artists, you know. But it's very important to learn that side, or else, you know, there's snakes out there. They're going to be taking advantage left, right, and center, you know.
One thing I'd say is, like, because we were very resistant to involving, like, anyone... really, that was going to be like taking a cut, you know what I mean? It's like it's clinging onto your £300. Yeah, but actually, if you get, you know, like these people involved, if you get an agent or you get the opportunity to, like, you know, have a manager or whatever, those things are worth it because they pay for themselves. Like the booking agent is going to get you more money, so they'll take a cut, but you'll still get a bigger chunk, and you don't have to do any of the awkward conversations. It's like, exactly. And they'll. If you've got a good one, then they'll, you know, like have a plan and build it into something where you're doing bigger and bigger shows. And that's kind of what we did. Like we just had smart people kind of making those moves for us, basically, which is...
You got a big show coming up at the Roundhouse,
yeah,
right? Coming up soon.
We're doing Brixton 02.
Oh, so, easy.
Yeah, we were talking about doing a big show, and then we realized that it's like 10 years of like Corrupt FM since the first series, I think it has came out, and just used it as an excuse to just have a little party with the fans. Because it's just fun for us now to like step back into those characters and just fuck around.
It must be
like,
well fun. Let's just smash it for one night.
I tell you, a beautiful thing as well about watching you guys live is, okay, when you see, you know, good DJ, like let's say DJ Zinc or whoever, like they're going to play new songs, old songs, and they're, you know, they're going to do an incredible set. But when people come to see you, they know they're going to get that throwback shit, that we, all the jump up tunes, the sing along tunes, all the bits, and then with comedy little bits in between as well. I know Chabuddy does his thing, and Sniper does the lyrics. It's so fucking funny, man. It's jokes.
Yeah, it's a balance that we never really wanted it to be. I guess ever since like what we did with you, like, we kind of decided at that point that we wanted it to be like a rave rather than a stand-up show. Like, we didn't want it to be like a sort of comedy performance where we're all like making gags.
And, yeah, these are certified raves.
It's that balance.
Yeah, because you can do, there's a version of it, you know, that would be like a stage show where we're like, you know, I don't know, fucking Steve comes out and trips over and all the lights go out or something. But it felt like that almost like undermined the idea of this being like them being real. And we like that
this being an actual rave.
It's so much funnier. Like, just imagine those dudes that we've seen on the TV in their house, like doing some shitty fucking pirate radio that only 50 people listen to. Imagine they were put on the Glastonbury stage. Like, what would they end up doing? And it's just like they're fumbling about, but they're catching jokes and they're just, you know, being those characters.
But we're out there doing what we are supposed to be doing at Glastonbury, which is shelling. And that's like, that's what's sort of fun as well, is that like, I love that music. So it's not forced for me to like be sort of excited about
doing what you want.
Yeah, this is like me being 15-year-old me and playing those like, but
which
playing
we all wanna be.
Instead of my bedroom, it's now fucking Glastonbury crowd. It's crazy.
Did you ever go like to One Nation and those raves back in the day at Bagley's and
stuff? No, I didn't. I wasn't really. I went to like some of the under-18s raves. I remember going to
I remember them.
What was the Education in Dance?
The Black Tie Ball Company.
Education in Dance. I remember that one. Yeah.
That was in like the one I went to. Yeah, Education. It was called Education in Dance. But it was like, that was in Ealing or like Hanwell. I remember I got the E2 to get there, so it must have been Hanwell, I guess. But
and it was like, under-18s.
Under-18s. I had the Iceberg shirt from Vito's with the little goofy
from Vito's.
And
I remember
like,
all the girls would be on one side and the guys, and they'd be like, oh, my mate, like, she fancies you. She wants to pull you. You know, remember like, those days.
And I'd heard about it. Like, it was like, people had started going and they were like, yeah, our lips like 19
yeah,
girls.
Yeah, our lips 13 girls. Birds.
Even the girl, because my girl mates would be like, yeah, our lips 11 guys or whatever. And I need to get involved in this. So I went down there with my shirt on, like, all trying to.
Yeah, I'm getting eyes burned up.
Yeah, exactly. Like the white YSL jeans.
Oh my days, man.
And I literally, I remember being so stiff. Like, I didn't know how to dance. Like, I didn't know what I was doing in there. Everyone's there just like effortlessly just getting into these like skanks. And I was like, just sort of looking at everyone trying to copy. And it was so bad. And I literally got no love whatsoever. No girls. Like, it was awful. So,
but you still had, back then, you still had to say, yeah, our lips like 12.
Yeah, you still had to say it. Yeah, still had to say it.
Yeah. Everyone was going, did you lips? Yeah. How many? Just don't.
Yeah, I can't.
Loads. I can't even remember that. This is such a mad night. I can't even remember. But that was sort of like, I remember around those times being more like, I was more just like hanging out, just fucking around with my mates and just like doing weird sort of, you know, like just smoking and drinking and like
in the park.
Yeah,
skateboarding in Chiswick,
climbing into abandoned buildings and all that sort of shit. It was.
But that's the good life, bruv.
That was a good time. Yeah.
My youths are never going to do that.
Yeah.
I have to like beat them up to get them off a screen.
Yeah.
Let alone like breaking into abandoned buildings and shit, which is the sort of shit I used to love.
Yeah.
But it's crazy.
So I wasn't, I guess I was never really part of the like rave sort of stuff. If anything, I've gone to more raves as an adult, like kind of as a DJ. So that's been a sort
Did you do any graph back in the day?
No, I was terrible at graph. You know what it is?
Yeah, you did do a little bit. Yeah.
Everyone tried though. Everyone tried in their fucking school books or whatever. But I was one of those people that like, if I'm not good at it, I don't like it. I had a couple of mates who were like quite good at it, and I just would sort of like watch them do it and sort of
What was your tag? Do you remember your tag or not?
I would have even had a tag. It would have been one of those shit like S's that you make out of the
lines.
Right.
The three lines over here.
No, there was, I'm trying to think who, so like Albo was my mate who was like, I grew up with, and he wasn't a big, like, he's not like a well-known graffer or anything, but he was really good. And I remember one time my parents were away and it was like the summer holidays and we had this idea to graph up my room. And basically I had decks at that time. So I had this like this shelf of decks.
Classic bedroom.
Yeah. And he drew this like massive piece, like with, you know, like the sort of alien looking guys with the like big hands. It was like a classic sort of style at that time.
Yeah.
There was like, so he had like a big sort of like light bulb shaped head with like a cap on and shit. And it was cold, but he did that like over the decks. And then on the other wall, we got carried away and he wrote Steve on the other wall, like massive dub in like bright fucking green and red, like really garish fucking clashing colors. And then my parents got back from holiday and just like walked into my room. It's like, fucking hell.
Oh shit.
They didn't mind, to be fair. My parents are quite laid back, but it was ridiculous. Like,
I had the same thing. Well, not same, like on my 14th birthday, I asked my parents, oh, can I spray paint my bedroom? So I got all my mates around. We went to fucking, like, I don't know where we got the paint from in the end, like Hobbycraft or something, like shitty hobby paint. Yeah. And we just like did one side of my wall. But then as the years went on, as you know, the weeks and the months and the years, like just I started battering more and more of my room. And as I got more into graph myself, you know what I mean? Like when I was 18, 19, I was like testing my paint on the wall and everything. I'm talking from the ceiling, the bedpost, the drawers, the cupboards, the insides of the cupboards, the ceiling of the cupboards, like everything.
Windows are all scratched.
I didn't go that far. But yeah, fucking hell. Like the whole room was battered, man. I'll put a couple of photos of it here. Do you still have a picture of that, Steve's? Big in your bedroom or now?
I could send you it. I haven't got it on me right now, but
I'll remind you.
There is a photo of it somewhere.
That would be jokes to see, man. You know what? I still got, like, not. I'm done talking about the warehouse party now, but I did, you lot put an advert together for me, a West London warehouse party advert.
Oh,
I don't
know if
I remember even putting it together. I'm just going to play it quickly, man.
Breaks! Breaks!
Sniper!
Over it. Right, listen, we've got to do this advert for this West London's like radio warehouse party, or say it. Right?
Yeah.
Remember what he was talking about earlier, yeah?
Yeah, I remember.
Sit down. Stop walking around. Sit down. Yeah?
Yeah.
Steve, hold stop it down. Walking everyone around. Shut up. Right, go.
Now, yeah?
Go.
Okay.
Hoodie Saturday! West London's Warehouse Party proudly presents the Party Radio Special! It's gonna be a slammer!
Saturday the 13th of October 2012.
Playing the finest in hip-hop, garage and drum and bass.
DJs on the night will be...
Ozak! Psychotage and the Master Mick!
DJ Liski!
Akuma back-to-back with DJ Calm!
Hosted by the Amber MC of the SDF crew. Now that's fresh.
But wait, there's more!
What's that?
A special one-off set from
the
Platinum from Conductive and Mercy!
Beats back-to-back with MC Sniper.
Featured in Steve's and DJ The Love Child Phobia.
So remember, on Saturday the 13th of October, this one can't be missed.
£7 entry on the door. There's only one rule, though. It's going to be good vibes only.
It's going to be a roadblock affair.
Stop that now. Like, I've got a fucking headache. Like, just, yeah, I think they... Oh, yeah, sound about... If you're not still listening, there's a link below. Click that.
Yeah, just click the link below. Yeah,
amazing.
I think I've forgotten how those radio ads used to sound.
Yeah,
I should have put some garage music behind it.
Exactly like that.
I fucked it. Yeah.
But even now, there's like pirate stations that play those kind of adverts, and they're not tongue in cheek. They're like completely genuine.
Yeah, but nowadays, some of them are for like this geezer come and fix your oven.
Yeah.
Or plumbers, but they still do it in that voice.
Yeah. Have you got a burst pipe?
Yeah.
Have you broken down by the side of the road? We can change your tire in approximately 5 minutes.
Exactly like that. A million 5-star Google reviews.
Damn, man. Listen, we got some listeners' questions. I told a few people that you were joining us today, we've got a couple of questions. But I want to play one of your songs first, man.
Go on.
Is there one in particular you wanted to play? Because I don't think we'll get through all of them, but is there one in particular? Maybe?
I can't even remember what I sent you, to be honest.
Play
NERD, because that's like a big, musically, that was one of the things that I think was like I was super into at that time, and I was like obsessed with with like Neptune's productions. I still am, but like, I feel like in that era, that sort of first like Nerd album was like, that was when the Neptunes were the Neptunes. They were like proper fucking making those crazy, like
it was crazy game-changing
productions. Yeah. And yeah, when they dropped the NERD shit, it was just like, it almost opened music up for me a little bit, because I was very like, went from sort of garage to like hip hop, but even then I was quite stuck in my sort of like what I liked. It was very like sort of US like hip hop, and then this shit just opened it all up, and it was like, oh shit, there's like maybe I don't mind like band sort of shit, and it sort of expanded my whole musical horizon, which I feel like is a, you know, that's a mad thing for an artist to be able to do, like to sort of open everything up and show you that sort of those other influences. So
I remember thinking exactly the same, and you think but I took it as like age, like I'm finally old enough to not give a shit if people think I'm a fucking pussy for listening to you know XYZ. Finally I don't give a fuck.
We've mentioned that several times on the pod, how in the 90s, like even myself personally, I was very narrow-minded as a teenager. I was like, if it ain't hip-hop, son, it's whack, yo, you know what I mean? And then
bit of jungle,
then I learned what samples were. Then I learned what samples were, and I started discovering James Brown and, you know, all these amazing music from the 60s and 70s. And I was like, oh, shit, that's where they got that from, man, you know what I mean? And then anything was possible from there, man.
Exactly.
But let's get into a bit of NERD. Cool. Themes are getting better.
Check it out, bitch. See, sometimes you gotta realize where you are in your life in order to feel good. And I feel good, baby. Walk in the club with a bunch of thugs. Modify your brain so they call me drugs. See 100 girls, get 1,000 hugs. One's in my ear talking about the tub. She likes me, she say she needs me, she say she wants me, cause I'm the shit. She says she likes me, she say she needs me, she wants to see me, cause I'm the shit. Now it seems that things are really getting better. Just today, our things are really getting better.
Right, okay. Actually, Steve, let me ask you. I know I saw the thing you did with like Post Malone and a few of these American artists who have reached out and said that they like People Just Do Nothing and all that. What's been the most surprising person who's reached out or that you've heard is into it or something?
It probably would be Post Malone, to be honest.
All right, okay.
Yeah. Right as well. Why are you laughing?
No. He can't believe it.
I keep laughing at it.
He's giddy. He's very giddy.
No, I said ladies.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying I can relate.
Okay.
I'm a light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that cool? It's saved.
Yeah.
Safe, man.
Yeah, sweet.
Only because of how into it he was. Like, it wasn't, you know, like sometimes you'll see, like, I don't know, someone follows the account or something, and, or you'll hear, I remember we heard, and I still don't know if this is like true, but the guys at Palace were saying that Jonah Hill had seen like People Just Do Nothing, and he was asking if we were like legit, basically.
Oh right, and, if you were real or not. I remember people on the YouTube show going, "Are these guys for real? Is they real?" Yeah, he was.
So that was that was quite mad, the Jonah Hill one. But it's always, you know, you're never really sure like how into it they really are or whatever. But with Post Malone, like, we went to his fucking house and like recorded shit with him, and he turned up like when we were doing, we did like a sort of Soho House like preview thing where we screened some episodes, and then we did
in
like
London
in LA.
Oh, in LA.
And we did like a DJ set on the roof and shit. And we were worried no one was going to turn up, but it was fucking, it was busy. And he randomly, in the middle of the set, we just see fucking Post Malone just appear behind us. And that was crazy. And then, yeah, so we went to his house. He was like super.
We went to his house.
Super excited. You know, yeah. Bravi's got like a pearlescent Cadillac parked outside. All of this madness that you're just like, you can't believe that you're even in this GTA sort of world.
On YouTube. Now, I'll send it to you, man. It's hilarious, man.
It's wild, but he was so up for it. And he was like fully wanted to just like, he wanted to film some stuff with us and was like open to all our ideas and everything. He gifted your buddy some cowboy boots, which are like, you know, those things are like super expensive as well. They're like proper real leather, like handmade. But as him just wearing them like as your buddy, just completely ruining them. But yeah, man, that was probably the most kind of
and also I've seen Action Bronson and Alchemist as well. I know they've shown some love. Yeah,
they were so. I think they were. I don't know how they got into it. Maybe through Alchemist, but he seems to be like quite tapped into the like British comedy stuff and. And obviously, we're all big hip hop nerds, so like, I think Sipa and like Asim and Hugo met him a few times, and I've met him. Mm. I've only met him once, but like, he's again like super kind of open and just like, just a fucking just a great geezer, and he's like, it's mad to sort of, you know, like meet your heroes that are like, that that's someone who. I listen to his music like most days probably. He's making a lot of the best hip hop.
He's great
at the moment. Like
and like not and you're meeting them but as peers now, more as peers.
Yeah.
Best mates, bruv.
That's just crazy. But yeah, I love those guys, man. Action Bronson's like he's such an inspiring guy in the way that he I feel like just the way he conducts himself and the way he approaches work and like he makes so much stuff, but he's always seems to be quite sort of like in control of it and not trying too hard. Like he's always...
Yeah, he's just being himself.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think Alchemist was saying like he's like the most real like guy. Like he never changes who he is for anyone. And that's like... Yeah, you got to respect that. That's hard to do when you're as big as he is as well. Like there's got to be so much pressure and so much money and so much opportunity that you have to like navigate and to be able to just like, I guess, just do the shit that you want to do and not be blinded by any other bullshit is like, that's
to have the confidence just to know that it's going to work. And even if it doesn't, we'll have fun making it. Like, that's kind of the vibe I get off him, you know what I mean? It's like, if it does well, cool. If not, whatever. We'll have fun doing it, you know what I mean?
And
I can tell Sipa is obviously very inspired by him with the Taste Cadets thing that he's doing and the whole fuck, that's delicious thing. Like, you can see the little thread through there, man.
Yeah, and Sipa's another one of those people that, like, he is very particular about what he likes and what he wants to do and... He's focused, like he wants to do, he's not getting any money out of Taste Cadets. He's spending his weekends and his holidays like filming stuff and making stuff for people to enjoy, but he's not getting any, like he's not getting rich off that. And at the same time, he's, you know, turning down like cheesy brand deals that could make him rich. It's like, if you know what your path is and what you really want to do, it takes like a strength to be able to just like focus in on that. Yeah.
And not being greedy, I suppose. Like, you know, there are some people you see, I mean, I'm not going to mention any names, but there's certain people who I loved when they were coming up, but then you just saw they just didn't say no to anything. And then they were just everywhere all the time. And I'm like, I'm fucking sick of your face now, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Some people, you know, I get it as well, but like, I think I always rate the people that sort of know what they want to do and they just focus on it, like, and do it well, rather than spreading yourself.
And getting any successes from doing that, from doing what you want to do, is going to be much more rewarding in the end anyway.
That's when
you
get there.
You're like, oh, freaking hell, come on, we did exactly.
Yeah, man.
We did it our way.
Let's get into this question sent in by Lady FaZe in Bristol. Let's go.
The curse of Brinks Matt was more like a karma kick for teething all that gold. Are you superstitious, and who or what would you curse if you could?
All right, she's talking about...
She just cursed us at the beginning. What was that? No, play that again? It was quick.
I'll explain. The Brinks Matt robbery, which is the TV show The Curse, which Steve was involved in.
London, the early 80s. It was rough out there. The worst recession since the war. We were looking for any way to change our luck, any way to get out, to get a bit more than we had. But as my old mum used to say, you got to be careful what you wish for.
You talk about a robbery.
It's not a robbery as such. I'll just open the door and turn my back.
That's still a robbery.
To the robbery.
Let's not say that too loudly.
It was based loosely on this robbery that happened in 1983 in Heathrow. Like, they ended up robbing shit, like £100 million worth of gold and
biggest
shit.
Biggest gold robbery ever.
There we go. And it was cursed or whatnot. I'm sure Steve's will elaborate a bit more. But then she went on to say, are we superstitious? And if we could curse anything, what would we curse? So I don't know, maybe talk on maybe the curse a little bit, yeah, like the TV show.
That was a good summary, though. Basically, it's the Brinks Matt robbery, which was a sort of accidental gold robbery where these guys broke into like a Heathrow storage facility. And just by pure chance, by pure luck, they happened to be moving the largest shipment of gold through that facility at that time. So they stumbled across this ridiculous amount of gold and robbed it, and then had no idea what to do because they were like not built for that sort of level of robbery. So there's this like true story that it was loosely based on. And we just did like a comedy sort of retelling of it. And essentially what ends up happening, we say this at the beginning of the curse, is that everyone dies. Like, everyone involved in the gold robbery gets killed in some way. And it's all obviously because they're involved in this, like, in this dodgy, like, gold shit, and everyone's trying to fucking rob each other and do each other in. So that became like the curse. That's why we called it the curse. It's like, it seems like a good thing to like end up with a shitload of gold, but actually it starts making everybody double cross you, and you don't know who you can trust anymore and all of that sort of stuff.
Exactly. And yeah, if you can't shift it in legal means, then you have to go illegally, and you're dealing with some of the most shadiest characters ever with millions of pounds. And it's like, yo, the amount of shit you must get into, man.
That was what was fun about doing the show, is that like, we were the sort of clowns, and then we'd be able to get these kind of like scary characters like Jeff Bell and like Peter Fernando and like Michael Smiley to play the characters that we needed to help us. And they would end up being the sort of ones that we'd have to like have, I don't want to give anything away, but they would end up being the ones that we had to worry about, basically.
Yeah, man. Shit. Okay, and so now, if you had to curse, are you superstitious, Steve, in general?
I think a little bit, not massively, like not in a sort of OCD sort of way, but you know that, like those ones that just stick with you from childhood, where you don't walk over like
three drains.
Yeah. Three drains. Yeah.
I still don't walk on three. If you do, this is so dumb, because like, if I remember hearing as a kid, if you walk over three drains by accident, if you spit within 3 seconds, then it nullifies it.
Yeah.
It's just so dumb now, but I still do it.
In the middle of Oxford Street.
Yes.
Sorry,
man. I don't want bad luck, you know. And just imagine spitting. And then once I did it and I spit, and then I ended up getting a 50 quid fine from a person there because you weren't allowed to spit or carry an open bottle. Yeah. So I was like, man, I'm supposed to get rid of the good luck. And
that's what they do now. They just wait around next to the three drains.
Three drains.
Oh,
yeah.
Mate.
Perfectly positioned, just like popping up. But in answer to the question of who I would curse,
or what would you curse? Yeah,
what would I curse?
Traffic wardens and nonces.
Oh, traffic. Yeah, that's quite nice. Yeah,
and then I'm done.
Probably the Tory government. I'd add them to the list.
Yeah. Mate, look, I'm going to give them one of these. They cursed us. Bloody Tories.
And the Tories. Yeah, man, they cursed us, so let's curse them back.
In it, man. Fuck them.
That's
man.
The top curse. That's the top curse.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who I would curse, man. I don't even know, man. I'm a nice guy, man. I don't wish a curse. Ah, I'll tell you one.
Mate,
okay,
shut
Steve.
Up. You're so moist.
I talk a lot about when I went to Brazil, yeah? Because I used to live
Have you been to Brazil, buddy? to Brazil?
I always bring it up. But there was a thing out there. Every street corner has like candles and like an item there.
Same in Venezuela as well.
I bet you, yeah, they have like a necklace or it could be like a watch or
Los Santos. Item. Los Santos.
There it's called Macumba. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I remember walking down the street with my sister and I just got there. Mm-hmm. My sister had been living there for a while. And I remember going, oh, what's that? And I went down to pick it up. She was like, don't touch it. And I was like, oh, shit. And she was like, nah, that's a Macumba curse, man. Like people, did, like if your boss did something bad to you, then you have to get an item off them somehow, like maybe a lock of hair or their watch or an item of clothing from them and then make this curse of them. And they put it in the street corners with these candles and curse these people. Yeah. But if you touch it, then the curse gets transferred onto you. Yeah. So no one touches them. Even the authorities, the bin men, no one cleans them up. So it's just everything on these
corners. There's loads of curses. I would have thought it was like a sort of, like a religious thing. I wouldn't have assumed it was like a negative.
It is semi. It's still semi religious. Yeah. They're like saints. They're saints. They're like So in Venezuela and Colombia, there's different saints for all different types of things. There's like an assassin murderer. If you want someone killed, and the statue that has that you put next to the candles and shit is a geezer like holding. Maddie, I'll send you photos.
Yeah,
it's a geezer. Then there's in Venezuela for sure, there's one where if you're having like a party, like a fiesta, and you want it to be like fucking going nuts, going mental, you pray to the party god. He's holding like rum and fucking marijuana, holding a zoot and rum. But they're like, when you're with them, they're like, no. It's a god. He's like, you can't take the piss. What the fuck? I can't take the piss out of this. Are you serious? Like, you're fucking doing this. They put you in the shower. Amazing. And they put like they make like some concoction on the stove, put it in this bottle, and you have to like rinse yourself whilst you're in the shower, praying to the Santos, and then you go and you smoke a cigar, but you don't let the ash drop. So you get like all these women outside on balconies, they're all there just chuffing their cigar, only birds as well. Yeah, exactly like that, bro. Just like fucking like that, and you go outside, it's just like, you're like, what the fuck's going on? And they're reading the ashes.
Oh, shit.
To see if the Santos have talked back.
Wow.
It's like, man. When you're in there, you're like, yeah, a bit of banter. But when you see they start doing it seriously, you're like, oh, shit. What the fuck is this? That's some serious.
But it's like anything else. It's like religion in general. If you kind of believe it and it affects you, how you can like see the world, or it makes things more positive for you, or it changes your
It can help
energy,
you. Or,
then it's a positive thing, isn't it? I guess it's...
Madness.
It exists all over the world in different forms, that sort of those different ideas.
I just remembered in Brazil when my brother came to visit us, we were all on the beach and like we were like, Talal, go get some beers. So he went off, got some beers, came back with all these like pearls around his neck. He was like, easy lads, check it out. And I was like, where do you find them? He was like, oh, I was on the corner on the street next to a candle. We were like, no, he's cursed now. So we stayed well away from him the rest of the trip.
He probably, it would have been the party god that he picked them up from, because he ruined the party.
You fucked it, man. Okay, cool.
Listen, we've got graph critique or are we wrapping it up?
Are you in a super hurry, Steve?
No, I could do that.
I know Theme has a hard out. I know you got a duck out for something, but
I got a duckage.
We do hear sometimes, I gave you a little heads up, we do graffiti critique. We got a lot of people who do graffiti who listen to this podcast and they're into all sorts as well, man. And I'm sure most of them are into people just do nothing and all that. So you good, you know what I mean?
I'm not qualified to talk about
You can say
anyone's...
whatever you want. We're giving you full license.
I'll just talk about what I like. Would I have it on my bedroom wall?
Listen, it got to a point now, because a lot of people who send their stuff in, it's not very good stuff, and they know it's not very good, and they know we're going to take the piss out of them. So
Steve's from Green Dragon Estate, mate. He says what he fucking wants.
Exactly.
Come on, son. All right.
I'm sending it to Steve's now. Hold on. There we go. Boom. I'll send it to you, Theme, in 1 second. Here we go.
Let's have a Frank and Pat. Bing, let's bang. Have a Frank and Pat at this. Let's have a Frank and Pat.
So this is
is this?
First of all, the photo is awful.
Yeah, it's terrible.
The photo's awful, bro.
He must have cut something up above it. Something must have been above it. Maybe his mate. He didn't want us to critique his mate or something. I don't know. Because
he's cropped that heavily. It's more of a photo.
There's a heavy croppage.
If someone said, "What's this a photo of?" I'd say it was a photo of the ground.
Exactly, it is. But just to describe it for the people, just listening, because some people just listen to the show. So it says Kerb, K-E-R-B. Oh, shit, I should have asked Steve so he could read it, but it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, no, I spotted that one.
Yeah, yellow outline, white little highlight.
Yeah, but who did the border and the stars and shit?
Yeah, it's him, man. It's all him. Curb, man. You know, blue fade going down, dark blue to light blue or grey at the bottom. I don't know.
I thought it was just blue.
Little black bubbles going through it. Yeah, maybe it's just blue and it's the photo shit. I don't know, man.
One thing I'd say that sticks out to me is the R. There's like a little really thin. It's a really thin like part of the leg.
It's like doing the can-can. He's kicking up his leg.
A floppy donkey dick coming out of a pee, bruv. What is that?
It's a bit mad.
And it's trying to connect to the bee, but the bee is like kind of, I mean...
The bee got taken out by the yellow shadow as well.
If I was ever going to use the R word...
This is going wrong all over the fucking shop.
It'd be to describe the bee, man. Jeez Louise, man.
I mean, no, but the R, there's no getting away with it.
Yeah,
there's no getting away. What happened there?
The R is even that's even by my standards, and I have no standards.
Yeah, see, if you did that and you step back, would you think to yourself, maybe the R needs a little bit of fattening up?
Yeah, a little thicken up on the
yeah, a little thicken up, bruv.
You know, jeez, Louise.
But who am I to say? Maybe this is perfect.
No. It's terrible, man.
This is far from perfect.
I often bring up like negative space, you know what I mean? The insides of the letters, you know, like on the B and the R compared to the E and the K. It's completely off. Like, come on. And I always end up telling people, keep it simple. Do a straight letter. Perfect doing just
this guy letter or girl needs to know about cutbacks because there's so many things going on. There's two, like, fucking hell. You see the black dots in the middle of the B.
Yeah.
When you've put those in and they're not right, which yours aren't, then you can get the yellow again and go round it again. It takes out, it like, you know, makes it good again, cleans it up. But fucking hell. It says, to me, it says Kep Tadpole B. Like, it's just weird. It doesn't exist.
Okay, cool. All right, Curb, nice one. Thank you for sending that in. Genuinely appreciate
it. You staying on the curb, sir.
For real. All right, one quick next one, man. I'm going to send it to you guys now. This one, I actually watched him paint it a couple of days ago down at the Latimer Road spot. This is...
So it's your mate, so we can't say anything bad.
No. It's. I'll explain. Basically, a couple of mates were there, and this was his son. He was 13 years old. He said he's dabbled with a spray can.
It's better than Curb.
Yeah, he's better than Curb, you know. And
Curb was actually only... Curb was only 12 years old, though.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe, you know. So this one says Chex, C-H-E-X. You see, he put me up there. I write Amber.
Man's coming with like the kind of Louis Vuitton schemes.
Yeah.
Like the pattern schemes on the inside.
Exactly.
It's quite a weird pattern, though. It's got like question marks and exclamation mark, like almost like and a warning dollars. Warning sort of sign.
Warning question.
And then like a dollar sign.
Maybe.
Yeah,
dollar signs. I mean, those are standard, like we call it TB here, toy behavior. You know what a toy is? Still?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so toy behavior. You know, TB. These symbols like the dollar sign and the, you know, stuff like that are, you know, they're quite heavily used.
He's a kid, though, bless him.
He's doing well. Look at Amber getting a reach on the left.
Exactly.
The shading. And Amber getting a reach on the right.
The shading's sick.
Oh, yeah.
I like the shading. He's gone
wrong on the X. You see the shading on the bottom of the X?
Yeah.
He's gone, all types are wrong.
Bit higher up. Yeah, but no, but in general, though, I agree. Ultimately, this obviously, because he's just starting, it's going to happen. So this isn't really...
Right, it's better than me when I was 13. Let me tell you
exactly. But his confidence of the line, you know what I mean? You can see the line is on, especially the long straight ones. They're a little bit on the shaky side, you know what I mean? But that's inevitably going to happen. So
you got no tadpoles in there.
Yeah, it's true.
You got nice chunky letters, chunky... shadows.
Yeah, and they're in proportion.
Yeah. They're consistent. It's good.
I don't know how much.
Check.
I don't know how much his dad helped him out or not, but he seemed to pretty much do most of it on his own, man. So you know, props to him. The colors, you know, decent. You can't go too.
Border
wrong.
Pops it off as well.
The border.
Pops it off.
I think he just didn't. He didn't need the pattern, the Louis V shit in the middle.
Maybe not. Amber's always saying, "Keep it simple, man. You're nice and clean. The fade's all right."
What are those things, the blue things at the top bit? They look like turds. You know, like if you laid a log, you know.
Oh yeah, one of them in the E looks like a sort of baguette type baguette,
or like log. Snowman or something. They're like a big circle, small.
Actually, Steve, he's got a couple of tadpoles in there. Some of those skeins, those blue skeins in the sea, coming. They look a bit tadpole-ish.
Fuck.
Yeah,
he's got a couple tadpoles in there, but you know, I think he was trying to do bubbles, man. So
big up checks, batter's curb every time.
Salute checks.
Put your pens down, bruv. Hand over your paint, bro.
No, big up. I mean, man, there were so many things I wanted to chat about, man, but like we're running a little bit low on time. But what was it? I was going to talk about, oh shit, I remember hearing that there was going to be an American remake of People Just Do Nothing based in Miami. I don't know if that was real or not real. I remember hearing about that years ago.
There was an attempt to do a Las Vegas one with like basically
Las Vegas, that's it.
Guys doing like the raves out the sort of outskirts of Las Vegas, and they did make a pilot, but it was like we said earlier, like pilots don't get picked up most of the time. So it didn't get picked up.
Did you see it?
But we really good. It wasn't that good. No. We're trying to
dog shit.
We didn't really get to be involved, so that was the problem in my mind.
That's the problem right there, bro. Yeah.
So we're gonna pitch a new one that's gonna be more about I don't know if I can even say, but we're gonna pitch a new American remake idea, and hopefully there could be like a better version, because I feel like there's definitely an American version of it. It wouldn't be Pirate Radio, it'd be like another little niche world, but those characters, like, there's, like you say, there's Steve's is all around the world. There's Steve's everywhere. Yeah. Everyone knows
there'll
Steve's.
Be a version of it, yeah.
And the same with like Jabuddy. There's a version of Jabuddy that exists in New York or wherever. So we need to tap into that.
Yeah, there'll be something. There's something like that, man. Maybe go to New York for a bit. Maybe pick some people's brains. You'll be able to like find a little thing in. I don't know. Yeah. I'm sure you know what you're doing. also, I can't go off without saying that I'm in People Just Do Nothing, the BBC show. Man. You can see me in the background of, I think,
oh yeah,
is it series 3, episode something?
Five.
Ipswich? Episode 5, I think. Yeah, the Ipswich episode. I remember you on Facebook going, we need extras for the background. You were filming just here in Ealing around the corner from my house. I was like, fuck it, I'm coming.
And I was only supposed to...
Yeah, I was only supposed to be in the background. Then you were like, hold on, we need someone to be the DJ. Because Grindr, when he walks in, he goes, who's that fucking shit? Was he playing that shit? And he points to the DJ, but there was no DJ. So you were like, oi, Steve's. You were like, yo, you know what you're doing. Get behind my...
The promoter, yeah?
Phil, yeah.
Nice to meet you, mate. Jabuddy G, manager of Corrupt FM.
Nice to meet you.
Okay, let me take you on through. We've set up like a green room for you.
Okay, let me take you lot through. I've set up like a green room for you guys. Yeah?
Ooh, Arena One. Very nice.
Ooh, nuts.
Oh god, the
DJ's
gonna have to turn that shit off before we go on.
It was our chance to give you a little nod to putting us on.
And I was gonna say, the warehouse party at the end of season 1, was that based on the warehouse party that we did?
A little bit, yeah.
Like little bits.
Yeah.
Stop looking for bring-ins, bro. You know what I mean?
I'm basically People Just Do Nothing, bro. I'm basically in People Just Do Nothing, bro.
You're basically Jabuddy G.
I'm basically the one who made Jabuddy G, bro.
You're the one who put on that show. You put on Champagne Steam Rooms.
I basically did, yeah. Straight up, man. Because I remember you telling me the Ipswich one was based on a real thing of like a next gig that you guys did somewhere and they just didn't get it or something.
Well, yeah, we did a few little shows out in like smaller clubs, and like some of them would be
bumpkins.
Some of them would be great. Mostly we got a good crowd, but the actual like experience of dealing with promoters and like the sort of experience was ridiculous at times. And we would be like counting the money afterwards, like in the back room. Like it was proper weird, sort of stupid times. But it was all kind of fuel for this like shit. So we put it into the show, basically.
Yeah. No, of course. Yeah. That's what you got to do, man. Theme, anything else you want to add on, man? I mean, I don't want to go too longer. Hopefully, maybe we can get you back as well, Steve, at some point in the future.
You're a West London certified Don. It's a pleasure talking
to you. Thank you, man. And everyone should watch Peacock Series 2.
Sorry, we didn't really get into that too much. I'm sorry.
I'm a cock and watch fucking Peacock Series 2.
Why did you want to meet in a cafe? You thought it'd be intimidating like how they do at Top Boy.
We do.
Insane.
It's important to be able to handle the unexpected. Strong leadership.
Andy Peacock, great name.
Mic drop. That's me dropping the mic.
Come outside now!
Did you want to go outside?
I'd rather not.
He doesn't want to come outside.
Give us the elevator pitch, man. Peacock.
So Peacock is basically about a personal trainer who sort of, in his like mid to late 30s, starts having a bit of an identity crisis and realizing that all his mates are settling down and having kids, and he isn't as kind of, his life's not as sexy as it used to be, basically.
Yeah,
kind of based on, you know, like everyone's experiences, I guess, as being a man in his like 30s when you sort of start realizing that, you know, where you are in life. And it's just like a fun show. It's got like Sipo, played Grinder, is the lead, and he's obviously a force of nature, but then it's got like, we've got some amazing cast around him as well. I'm in it playing his client that he's had for years, who basically goes to the gym loads but can't get big, and is basically a gold mine for him because he's never going to progress.
Yeah.
And then, the new series is about him kind of joining a new gym, and he meets a new personal trainer who's like a influencer and a bit of a kind of she's got a bit of internet sort of fame, so he's completely like starstruck by her and wants to be like her. And it's a sort of, it's a little bit of a takedown of the sort of cynical influencer culture, and like
brilliant
Andy kind of getting sucked into that world and then realizing that actually it's not all it's cracked up to be. Which again is like,
what's it on?
Again,
it's what's right it going to be on? What is it
experience.
On?
On iPlayer.
Brilliant. Okay.
Yeah, it's on BBC Three. Fucking sweet. Every Tuesday at the moment, but the football's on, so that no one's watching it.
but
it's all on iPlayer. Yeah. Every episode.
Oh, people rarely watch things just, you know, when they come out. People usually now they're streaming and they're fucking know, checking stuff out and stuff like that, man.
Yeah, binging.
Yo, Steve, thank you so much, man. Can I get you just very quickly now to camera, if you can say, yo, this is Steve Stamp. You're listening to Arms House to Your Mum's House.
I'm more important than Ivan Tony in Brentford.
So. Yes, this is Steve Stamp, and you are listening to Arms House to Your Mum's House. Yeah? Keep it locked.
Easy now. Much love, brother, man. Hang on
much
the line.
Much love, man.
I'm going to switch
man.
Off.
Thanks for having
we'll
me.
Go out. We'll go out to this tune, Jamming. By DJ Zinc, Hello.
Big tune.
Yeah, from the Bingo
my
2002.
Boy, my boy, my
I remember
boy,
you DJ played Zinc. This at the warehouse as well. Man.
Yeah.
There you go. That's it. Arms House episode 84.
Yeah, boy.
Everyone!